Yelston, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a victorious Sunday edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. As I adjust my levels there, sorry about that. It's been a long day. For those of you who don't know, my day gets started on game day at about 7 o'clock. Workout, breakfast at Avalon, 8 o'clock, 8:30. I like to be at the studio, 9 o'clock pregame, then the game, then the postgame, finishes at 6:30, and now here I am recording the podcast. So it's a long day. So if I'm doing little quirky little things like adjusting the level of my microphone while you guys are watching, then so be it. We can live with that. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, and pleased to be with you following a Houston Texans 29-27 win over the Indianapolis Colts in a game that probably should not have been as close as it was. We'll get into winners and losers in just a second, but let me just first say I am ecstatic about this win. The Colts are the closest thing the Texans have to a consistent rival, I think, them and Tennessee. And we know what all the trash talk had been like throughout the offseason between these two teams. So for the Texans to be able to come up with a big win in Indianapolis today is absolutely huge. If you listen to the podcast, you know my feelings on the importance of this game. I know this is not the sexiest game on the schedule for people outside of Houston or Indianapolis. I know if the Texans are what they look like today for most of this game, then the Kansas City game is going to be a bigger marquee game. The Ravens game on Christmas will be a bigger marquee game. The three primetime games at the middle of the season with the Jets and the Lions and the Cowboys will be sexier matchups than this one. You know, this one is I guess in the eyes of the NFL, a noon kick on a Sunday for a reason. But empirically, if you believe that the Indianapolis Colts are the second best team in the division, which I do, and I believe it even more after today, after seeing Tennessee and Jacksonville both cough up double-digit leads, 14 and 17-point leads on the road and losing their games, I think Indianapolis is the second most dangerous team in the division, and thus winning the division is the ticket into the postseason. So thus, this was the most important game on the schedule. That the Texans were able to win the road game in Indy in week one. I don't have the division probabilities in front of me, what the percentage chance of winning the division was before this game and now after this game. I just know that in terms of winning the division, this was the most important win you could get. Beating the team that's right beneath you in their place. You know, so that's huge. So that's really, really big. So good on the Texans for that. They've now won 9 straight in the AFC South. If you can believe that, how crazy is that? Cause that's a streak that dates back to David Culley and Lovie Smith, two guys who were significantly lesser head coaches than, D'Amico Ryans. So 9 straight wins on the road in the AFC South. They won't play another AFC South road game until just before their bye week against Jacksonville. So we won't have another road trip inside the division for another 12 weeks or so. And then they close the season at Tennessee. But very attainable to keep this thing going for at least this season, the road dominance in the AFC South. So as far as the game overall, look, this is a game that probably shouldn't have been as close as it was. The Texans defensively gave up 3 massive chunk plays of 50 yards or more, one of which was a touchdown. The other 2 set up touchdowns, the last one happening with under 5 minutes to go in the game where you had them 3rd and 15. And if you just knock the ball down on that play instead of letting Alec Pierce go up and get it, then you're talking about 4th and 15 and the Colts are one play and you put the game away. And instead they scored a hang around in this game. Add to that a blocked punt and that's on your own 5-yard line, and that set up another score. There were so many things in this game that the Colts can't count on happening every week against the Texans or any other team that I actually feel really good about where the Texans are coming out of this game. If they had lost the game, I would have hated the mistakes. And the biggest one we'll talk about too is the end of the half where the referees just completely confused everybody. And unfortunately, among the confused were D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud, who allowed the clock just to run out inexplicably at the end of that. Well, very explicably, because we knew that the whole thing was a clusterfuck That was the one glitch I thought on the day for D'Amico and CJ was the end of the half. So we'll talk more about that in winners and losers. But overall, my feelings about this are that I completely, even though they gave up 27 points, I think the defense is, I'm enthusiastic about the defense. And the offense, I think, I loved what they did. I love that they can score when they get in the red zone now. When they couldn't get in the red zone, Kymie Fairbairn's kicking field goals. So my enthusiasm level and optimism level about this team, and keep in mind, I picked them to be 11-6. I feel fine with 11-6 after this game. This wasn't one of those wins where, you know, put it this way. If Indianapolis had won this game, I don't know, and I were a Colts fan who thought the Colts were going 11-6. I don't know that I would feel that way after this game, even if they had won, because of the fluky things that needed to happen in this game in order for them to win. Now, the Texans start giving up 3 or 4 50-yard plays every game, then it's a different conversation. Until then, I'm going to view this game as an outlier, and I'm going to believe that they're not going to do that again. First of all, I don't know that they're facing many quarterbacks who can throw the ball as far as Anthony Richardson can, from the body contortions and whatnot that he had. So, let's get into winners and losers. You guys know how I feel about the game in general. Let's recognize some of the people, both good and bad. We'll start out with the winners. Excuse me. I'm going to start with Nick Caserio as a winner in this game as a way to recognize both Joe Mixon and Stephon Diggs. There's really too many winners in this game, I think, particularly offensively, to where I would need more than 4 bullet points. So I'm going to recognize Nick Caserio because it was a good day for him. Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon, his two biggest acquisitions on the offensive side of the ball, had huge days today. Stephon Diggs, not eye-popping numbers in terms of catches and yards, but 2 touchdowns in the red zone, providing an option down there where the defense is all caught up in making sure that Nico and Tank don't beat him over the top or they're giving a lot of space underneath. Diggs proved today that he could be a guy taking advantage of that space. 6 catches for 33 yards. I thought he ran well after the catch. I thought he ran physically after the catch. When he did get the ball, they gave him the ball in an end around maybe 1 time, 2 times, whatever it was. I thought he ran physically in those situations as well. I don't freak out at all that Stephon Diggs only had 33 yards receiving. To me, it was how they were using him here. And the fact that he gives you a weapon when it starts getting tight down there, that he's a better weapon maybe with some of these crossers or little out routes that he scored the touchdown on 4th and goal, I think is significant. You know, that you get down in that tight space, you don't feel like you got to lob it in the back corner and hope that Nico goes up and gets it. Not that he's not capable of that. He is, but these are just more conventional high percentage plays that you're able to run with Diggs down there inside the 10 or 15 yard line, or in the case of the last touchdown, inside the 5 yard line. If I could tell you how many, if I had a dime for how many times during training camp they ran those out routes, the timing routes to the outside that CJ scored the touchdown on with Stephon. And every time they did it, it's just, you watch it and you take for granted how easy they make it look, the two of them. And they made it look easy on that 4th down play. Does make me think, just do that on 2nd down next time, please. And don't make me have to have a heart attack while we're watching this stuff. But I think the two acquisitions, Diggs, we dug into that, and then Mixon. Look, to me, this can be the difference between the Texans offensively last season when they were pretty good, this season when they have a chance to be elite, is Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon, you saw today what it looks like when a running back is running in this system and knows how to run in this system, can feel the blocking, you know, knows when to put the foot in. And then with Mixon, runs with such physicality after he gets through that initial wave. There was never a carry today where Mixon is falling backwards. He's always moving forwards. If a play is blocked for an average running back to get 5 yards, Mixon gets 8 because he plows over the next guy to touch him. You know, if a play is poorly blocked and a regular running back can only get 1 or 2, Mixon's going to make damn sure he gets 4, is one of my takeaways from his first game as a Texan. You know, I saw plenty of Mixon games with him in Cincinnati as well and saw a lot of this. A lot of the same physicality that he runs with. But I think the biggest things to me, forget about the 30 carries for 159 yards for a second, which are amazing. I think it's the fact that one, if we're just going to look at stats, that he got those numbers, but the longest carry was 13 yards. That's a bell cow back. That's a guy who's churning out 6, 7, 8 yards every single time. That's a guy who has you in 2nd and 3 and 2nd and 2 on the regular. Joe Mixon, and that's what he was doing today, having them in favorable down and distance situations. CJ's already a guy, as we saw a couple times today, that can operate in bad down and distance situations and completely flummox a defense. We saw it a couple times to Nico on 3rd and 14, on 3rd and 11 towards the end of the game. But, man, if you have CJ Stroud consistently in 2nd and 2, 3rd and 3, you know, like good down and distance situations, especially on 2nd down, man, the amount of playbook that's available to you and the things this team's going to be able to do over time when they're back home, when they're playing lesser defenses than the Colts, that's really exciting to think about. So Joe Mixon, big gold star for Joe Mixon. The fact that he was running so grinding out yards so consistently without the benefit, he had 159 yards without the benefit of a 60-yard touchdown or something like that. Number two, he was able to run it in the red zone. This team has not been good moving the ball in the red zone, and now that you've got a serious running threat in Joe Mixon, wow, that's going to make things so much easier for C.J. Stroud. And number three, the ability to run the football at the end of the game when the Colts know that you want to run the football. The ability to do that and get consistent yards there. I'm not even consistent. I mean, they were 2nd and 9 at one point. Of course, they were 3rd and 11, and they needed a diving catch from Nico Collins to really help secure the win. But Mixon, 3rd and 3, man, you line up and you give the ball to Joe Mixon, you pitch it to him. It's a pretty conventional run play, and he goes and gets you 8 yards, game over. He's a closer, man. And so Joe Mixon and Stephon Diggs, thank you, Nick Caserio. Good acquisitions. You are winner number 4. Winner number 3, Nico Collins. Nico Collins loves Lucas Oil Stadium. Loves Lucas Oil Stadium. He was on with us on the postgame show afterwards with me and Clint Sterner. Talked about how much he loves playing in that place. And obviously his last 2 regular season games, he's caught 15 balls for over 300 yards combined in those 2 games. He was scintillating today. I think I could argue that the 3 most important passing plays in this game were all Nico Collins catches that I don't say nobody else can make. But I don't know that they've got another player on this team who goes up and gets that ball in between 2 defenders to set up the first touchdown, I believe it was, 55 yards. I don't know, you know, maybe Diggs can physical his way like that, but he's just not as physically imposing as Nico. That play, the play on 3rd and 14 where CJ was rolling to his right, found Nico, you know, threw back across his body, across the field, probably an ill-advised throw, except Nico just settled in the zone there, was wide open, and that kept the drive alive. That was a drive that ended up with Mixon scoring the touchdown to make it 22-13. And then the 3rd and 11 catch along the sidelines was just, he's just such a stud, man. Nico is such a stud. And him getting that knee down and holding on to the football, it's just so good. And so Nico Collins, 6 catches, $117, earning every penny of that contract extension. Well, we'll mix Nick in there a little bit as well. Nick got Nico to agree to a contract extension that I think is going to, already looks like it's below market for what Nico is doing today. So that's winner number 3. Winner number 2, let's give Kyme Fairbairn a little bit of love. Texans did fine once they got in the red zone. Where they bogged down offensively today was when they got in kind of the, I don't know, they call it the gray zone or the lighter red zone, the pink zone, whatever. But the between like the Colts 45 and the Colts 20 is where things really, between the Colts 45 and the Colts like 30 is where things started to bog down at times today for the Texans. So Kyme Fairbairn kicking 3 field goals of 50 plus yards. They gave him a big deal this offseason too. Good job, Nick, on that one. Nick Caserio is sprinkled into every bullet point in this one here because he's got his fingerprints on all of these guys. But Kyme Fairbairn, it's why you pay him top kicker money, man. 3 field goals of over 50 yards. You don't win that game without Kyme Fairbairn as your kicker today. So he is winner number 2. Winner number 1, I'm going to call it the swarm defense for what they did with Jonathan Taylor. Things were a little leaky on the back end today. We'll get to that in losers. But as far as their main goal, which I got to believe is to shut down that Colts run game. Richardson had a few plays against them in the run game, most notably a 25-yard scramble for a first down, and then the touchdown on 4th and goal where he carried a couple guys into the end zone. but it was Jonathan Taylor, 16 carries, 48 yards, if I'm not mistaken. Let me look that up and make sure that I'm correct on that. They did a number on Jonathan Taylor. And keep in mind, the last time these two teams met, Jonathan Taylor was busy carrying the ball 30 times for 188 yards. So they held Taylor in check today. Let's see. Jonathan Taylor. 16 carries, 48 yards, exactly 3 yards a carry. Did get into the end zone one time for a touchdown after the block punt. But the Texans defensive line, I thought the times I saw Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter out there, they did a really good job of holding the edge when Taylor wanted to get outside a few times. The interior of the defensive line held up nicely. Hell, the interior of the defensive line got the only two sacks of the day for the Houston Texans, Mario Edwards and Foley Fatakasi. So big thumbs up for the front seven defensively. Saw Henry Toa Toa throwing himself around quite a bit out there today. He led the team in tackles with seven. So that was good to see. A handful of TFLs for guys. You know, Will Anderson had one. Mario Edwards had one. Even Stingley had a TFL. Toa Toa got in the backfield one time. Foley Fatakasi. So they did enough shutting down that run game. So that's the number one star of this game, that they made Jonathan Taylor a non-factor in this game. Good job, Texans defense. So those are the four winners. Let's quickly get to the four losers in this game. Or around the league. Sometimes, you know, I can't find enough losers on the Texans, or I just feel like I want to talk about something. So it may not all be Texans, but I would say loser number four, the end of the half. The end of the half stuff with the Texans. And if you missed it, it's almost too long and confusing to reset it here. If you're listening to this podcast, you watch the game, so you know what I'm talking about. The whole sequence where Dalton Schultz made an inconsequential catch, which wound up being upheld, but for some reason, New York felt like they needed to review this stupid little Dalton Schultz 4-yard catch. And it turned into the most confusing shit for everybody, because once they determined that it wasn't a catch, or it was a catch, I should say, once they determined it was a catch, then the play, which had taken place already of CJ spiking the ball, that play never counted. And then they decided to put it at the 15-yard line when it probably should have, they decided to put 15 seconds on the clock once they determined that Dalton Schultz did catch the ball, but was down. So Shane Steichen calls a timeout, and they decide to change it to 5 seconds left. But nobody told the Texans, I guess, or they didn't go find out that the clock indeed was not stopped anymore, that they ran 10 seconds off the clock because of a 10-second. It was so fucking – I hate talking about it. It was so stupid and confusing. That this thing was ever reviewed in the first place by New York is so dumb, and that it caused enough confusion to where the Texans were all staring and looking at each other once the ball was placed – with 5 seconds left. I have to believe the Texans thought that the clock was going to be wound on the snap, not on the whistle, because CJ is looking around and D'Amico's got a blank stare on his face, and then 5 seconds go off the clock and the half is over and you don't get a shot at a field goal. So the whole thing, the whole situation was I'm going to make loser number four the officiating crew. And that means New York. That means the officiating crew on the field, who clearly did not inform people well enough as to what exactly was going on. That officiating crew had a few moments today where I'm like, okay, this feels like this. I don't know if they assign officiating crews based on the quality of the game, but this feels like we got like the CBS D team announcers, but we got the referees. We got like the D team referees. I hate talking about this. I'm so mad at everybody right now about this that I'm talking about it. And then I'm going to put number three loser, two-headed, with CJ and D'Amico, and they both admitted this. D'Amico in the interview on the way to the locker room, and CJ in his post-game interview, both admitted they each needed to have a better grasp as to what was going on, which is true. Even if the referee is a dope and an idiot and doesn't walk over and tell you guys what's going on, that, hey, the clock is going to start as soon as we place it and blow the whistle, because I think everything changes at that point. If that were the case, then I think D'Amico probably has CJ spike the ball again, and they just trot Fairbairn out there. I know it looked like they were trying to get a few extra yards and make it a closer field goal. I think if you're winding the clock there on the whistle, there's just too little time there to expect a guy to catch the ball and get out of bounds. feasibly, you know, it could happen. So I think they would have probably spiked it and then let Kiami try a 55 yarder. But CJ and D'Amico both, they clearly didn't know what was going on. Like, they clearly had not gotten confirmation from somebody. Otherwise, the half wouldn't have ended the way it did. The half wouldn't have ended with them just dawdling around while the clock is running. And so they lose out on that. This would have been a much bigger topic, if the Texans had ended up losing this game on a last second field goal, that they just basically coughed up 3 points at the end of the half and didn't even get a look at a field goal because nobody knew what the hell was going on. And again, I'm parsing blame out to everybody. I think the referees stunk. Good job by Shane Steichen calling a timeout and making the referees kind of look at it again. Steichen is a big winner in that whole situation. So Steichen won the chess match there. Now, I will say this, as long as I'm assigning a loser tag to D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud, that I thought both were fabulous the remainder of the day for the most part. I actually, there were a lot of people complaining about D'Amico's aggressive nature in this game, going for it on, or I should say going for two after the first touchdown. I would have kicked the extra point, but I understood what he was doing there. As long as you do something that has a reasonable explanation and a reasonable chance of happening in a situation where you can't get jerky and stupid about things, then I'm cool with it. I wouldn't have done it. I would have kicked the PAT, but I understood what D'Amico was doing. I loved the call of going forward on fourth and goal at the two instead of kicking the field goal down there at the end of the game. Because theoretically, you win the game there if you score a touchdown and then just don't give up a 55-yard fucking pass to Alec Pierce to give them another shot at this. Like, if your defense does its job up 29-20 with 3 minutes or so to go, whatever it was, then I'm cool. You know, like, then you're good. What I thought D'Amico was maybe thinking there is that if we don't get the touchdown, then it's 22-20, but the Colts are pinned back up against their goal line. Like, I think D'Amico felt better about keeping the Colts from driving down and kicking a field goal, starting at their own two, down two, than he did about the Texans stopping the Colts up five with the Colts getting the ball after a kickoff return to the 30 or something like that. So it's just different when you force a guy to operate down there. Like, it's like down there in the shadows of your own goalpost, it takes away a lot of things that Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor are able to do. They're going to spend a down or two just trying to get it off of the goal line. And then, you know, down there where it's kind of cluttered and tight space, I think you could envision Anthony Richardson maybe making a mistake down there. So I liked the fourth down calls D'Amico Ryans made. I was totally cool with. Didn't agree with the one on going for the 2-point conversion, but I was cool with that one as well. So, and I thought CJ for the most part was pretty good today. I think there's a few throws he'd like that back. I think he got very lucky on the throwaway that he tried to have, that the guy who intercepted it, that his heel came down on the sideline there. So I thought. And I thought he underthrew Nico on that long catch, 55 yards. I thought he had Tank in the back of the end zone. Like, this is the level CJ Stroud is at now. He's at such a level right now that he's not being held to a normal quarterback standard anymore. He's being held to a CJ Stroud standard. So the CJ Stroud standard is that you lead Tank in the back of the end zone, that ball doesn't get knocked away by a defensive back. You guys know the play I'm talking about. Could have been a touchdown to Tank. That if he leads Nico Collins on that play, the 55-yard catch where Nico went up between two guys, Nico had those guys beat. If he throws him into the end zone, I think that's a touchdown there. Again, it's a 55-yard catch, and the Texans go on to score anyways. But that's like, CJ was really, really good for most of the day. There's just a few throws that were uncharacteristic. I thought he looked a little like kind of rusty. He admitted to the game after the game to being a little bit rusty in that game. And yet, if you look at the box score, dude's 24 of 32. He's averaging 7.3 yards per attempt. Doesn't turn the ball over. Got sacked a few times. Had to maneuver. Thought some of the plays where he had to use his legs, he was great. So CJ was really, really good. The loser designation for D'Amico and CJ is for the end of the half. The big plays as well, I'm going to add that. Like, the loser is the back end of the defense. Whatever happened on that Doolin touchdown, that the catch and run that got them back to within 22-20 in that game. The play to Alec Pierce on 3rd and 15 towards the end of the game that set up Anthony Richardson's touchdown run on 4th and goal is inexcusable. You can't let that happen. Jimmy Ward's right there. You got to find a way to knock that ball down, Jimmy Ward. And then the Alec Pierce touchdown, you know, you got you got Derek Stingley Jr. and Jimmy Ward getting beat and falling ass over tea kettle with each other. Can't let that happen, man. Now, I don't know that there's a lot of people on earth that could have made that throw to Alec Pierce, you know, slipping, Anthony Richardson falling backwards, guy in his face, and he throws it 68 yards in the air. Absolutely incredible. But the big plays, you can't have them. And I'm confident they won't. Like, I think this, again, I'll go back to this. I think this is a game. And my number one loser is Jonathan Taylor for all the reasons we talked about in the previous winners. 16 carries for 48 yards. That ain't getting it done. And again, my feeling on this game is that there were so many things, fluke-ish things that happened in this game that I just don't think are going to happen on a regular basis with this team. That's what kept the Colts within shouting distance. All of their touchdowns were either long catch and run plays or set up by a long pass play or a block punt. Like, that's what their four touchdowns were: a prayer to Alec Pierce, a coverage bust by the Texans on Doolin, a prayer to Alec Pierce again that set up a touchdown where they needed Anthony Richardson to muscle in on fourth and goal just to get it in the end zone. And then a short touchdown by Jonathan Taylor set up by a block punt. There was at no point in the game were the Colts consistently doing what the Texans did, which was running for 8 yards, throwing for 10 yards, running for 6 yards, throwing for 14 yards. They didn't have a single drive in the game where they did that. They needed either a block punt or a 50-plus yard play to score touchdowns in this game. So I feel really good about the Texans coming out of this game. Really good. And I think the offense is only going to get better. Like, I think CJ was decent today, but I think there's going to be teams that are going to get completely flummoxed and burned by this receiving crew, and it's going to be beautiful. So 29-27, the final score. Texans are in first place in the AFC South. A quick reminder to hit me on the mailbag. Hit me in the mailbag, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. We'll do a mailbag episode a little later on this week on Tuesday, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast as well. If you have not subscribed yet, but you're listening and you enjoy it, or you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button wherever it is you get your podcasts, or on YouTube or wherever it is you watch. And appreciate you guys tuning in. It went a little longer than I thought I would, but this was fun to talk about today, man. 29-27, the Texans beat the Indianapolis Colts. Ninth straight road win in the division, and third straight time they've beaten the Colts in Indianapolis, and this is a huge win. Biggest, empirically, this is the biggest win they could have this year, because this is the biggest win towards winning the AFC South. If they're in the mix for the number one seed overall when they play Kansas City and Baltimore, and those two teams are also in the mix, I will stand corrected and make that the bigger win. But based on what I think the Texans are going to do this year, which is go 11-6, this was the biggest win. And you get it in week one. It's pretty cool. All right, I'm done. Anthony Irwin, my producer, thanks to him for getting the podcast out to all of you. I'll see you on Tuesday for a mailbag episode. See you tomorrow morning on Payne and Pendergast, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Seth and I have you covered for all things Texans. We will see all of you then. Have a great night. Thank you for watching and listening to the Utopia Football Podcast.